A very pleasant good morning to you. This is live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm your host, Tracy Ellis, with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. And you can email me with your questions. It's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. That's tracy.ellis. at leg.wa.gov, or call 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100, and ask your question that way, and we'll pass it along to the legislators for you. Well, wolves had a hearing. I don't think there were any wolves at the hearing. That would be dangerous, but there was a hearing about wolves in the House, and I know that you both are sponsoring. And when I say you both, I'm talking to Representatives Abel and Engel, Wolf Bills. How did the hearing go? What was it on, I guess, first off, and how did it go?
Well, there's two bills. First was my bill, which would downlist wolves from threatened down to sensitive, or actually endangered down to sensitive. And the other one was Hunter Abel's bill, on which would provide regional management options to counties of wolves. Started with the work session with the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Colville Confederated Tribe talking about the history of wolves in Washington State, which was quite fascinating. Of course, for those of us who live there, we pretty well knew that. But they gave a lot of the data and laid the foundation for the hearings that followed. And I think it was really positive. You know, one thing that stood out was the Colville Confederated Tribes talking about how when wolves first showed up 15 years ago, that they thought they could handle 1 to 3 packs on the reservation. I think they said today there are 9 packs, and they believe that 5 is the maximum healthy number. They actually offered to relocate them to anywhere in Washington that would like to experience what they're experiencing. People laughed, and then the chairman says, "No, I'm serious. We have the ability to do it, and we are happy to do so." And he said, we're not looking to extirpate the wolves from the landscape. We've had people try to do that to our members, and we don't wish to do that to the wolves, but they do need to be managed because they're impairing our ability to hunt the game that we rely on to eat, and they're out of balance, and we need to manage them better. So I think the hearing went really well. That was the foundation. He finished there, and then we went on to take testimony, and of course, we always have the people from Ocean Shores and other parts of the state that believe that they know how best to manage wolves in our neck of the woods. But overall, I think it was a productive hearing.
Yeah, two quick additional observations on that. First of all, it's so meaningful for us, the 7th District representatives in Olympia, when we get people who come here to testify in person. I mean, we know, and the other legislators in the room know, that folks who come here from the 7th District often travel as much as 700 miles round trip to testify on this. And the 7th District came out in spades for these hearings. So Andrew mentioned the representatives from the tribe. So special thanks to Chairman Erickson and Cody Desitel from the Colville Confederated Tribes. We had a couple of county commissioners show up in person, Ferry County Commissioner Zach Trudell, Stevens County Commissioner Mark Burrows, and a bunch of different individuals made the trek out here. So that was incredibly meaningful. The other piece is how neat it was for me to see that Andrew had been doing all kind of the pre-hearing work with the rest of the committee. One of the best things we've got going for our district is Andrew's service on the Agriculture Committee. And you can see he'd done a lot of advance work with the committee members. I think that showed through in the course of the hearing.
What do you think the chances are for the bill?
You know, that's a good question. I feel like it's got a decent chance of getting out of committee. Some of that will depend on whether Speaker Jenkins decides she wants it to get voted on or not on the floor. We are looking at some amendments, and so that's kind of we'll just kind of see how that goes. I'm interested in people's feedback, so if anyone on this listening to this program has input on it, I'd like to hear about it. There's a Democrat looking to introduce an amendment that would keep the penalties high for poaching. It's one of the big concerns that wolf advocates who understand the science have, is that downlisting will be an incentive for people to poach. And I've made it clear that the purpose of the bill is not to make it easier for people to break the law. But I also don't want to send the message that we're bringing a bigger hammer on people who are doing what they feel they have to do to protect their families and their livestock. the wolf advocates say that the goal, they don't have that goal either. They are concerned mostly about these wolves that are getting across the Cascade Mountains into Southwest Washington. And so far, every known wolf that's made it across the mountains into Southwest Washington has perished, whether by human hands or others. And so they're looking at, I think the amendment's probably going to increase or maintain, I think it actually maintains the penalty for poaching at $5,000. And then it would increase the statute of limitations to 3 years and potentially have the ability to restrict people's future hunting rights should they be caught poaching. They made it clear that they're looking more for those people who are poaching for the joy of killing a wolf than they are for those protecting their livestock, but I don't know that they'd be differentiated in the amendment. And so the question is, if what can we handle if we have the ability to get the bill across the finish line with these enhanced poaching penalties? Is that going to be seen as a win, or are people going to be concerned about that? And so that's something I need to weigh as we determine what the future of the bill is.
Senator Short, I see you nodding your head over there. You're just nodding.
Well, it's part of the ebb and flow. I mean, what Andrew is experiencing as the bill moves through the process is kind of the ebb and flow of, you know, of the issue and particular stakeholder groups. And, you know, basically we want to preserve the ranchers, really any individual right to protect their life and their property, and not be penalized for that. So he's absolutely right to make sure that there is a bright line, if you will, if there are penalties for poaching, that does not include individuals who would be protecting their life and property. So it's a part of the process over here, folks. Honestly, if we had our way, they'd be delisted, but and I think the science shows that too, but I'm really proud of both of their efforts to bring awareness to this and to push movement forward.
Okay, that was one of the things happening in the House. One of the things happening in the Senate was the very controversial bill to undo some provisions in the Parents' Rights Initiative that passed last year. That bill did pass off the Senate floor. It was a party line vote. And Senator Short, why don't you talk a little bit about what happened?
Well, it's so frustrating when you think of 454,000 people throughout the state of Washington just expressing an interest in protecting parents' rights, the very foundational, fundamental right of a parent to raise his or her child without interference, frankly. And just to see that unravel, if you will, supporters on the other side, the Democratic majority would tell you that they were just quote unquote doing cleanup, that it wasn't, you know, there were just clarifications. Folks, the initial bill that was on the floor for debate would have absolutely, you know, just devastated parents' rights to know when their children are injured at school or taken off school property, just a number of things. While we were able to get amendments to essentially put it back to immediate notification, I have no doubt that the House Democrats will not like those changes to the bill, and they will work, you know, they'll work to change them. I'm super proud of Senate Republicans to stand up and understand the very fundamental role that parents have in their children's lives. And I think it continues to purposefully use our public education system to get in, you know, just to create a chasm, if you will, between a parent and their child. We've seen articles that have come out, most notably in the Pierce County school system, where there have been multiple, you know, people working for the Pierce County schools that are the subject of investigations into sexual assault and other things. And we've seen where one teacher specifically in Olympia, you know, sought to keep, you know, to really to cause a child to want to do gender reassignment. And without, again, without the parents' knowledge, that went on for quite some time. And so, folks, this is not what our public education system is supposed to be for. It's supposed to be for the education of our children to be able to learn and grow and become the kind of, you know, citizens they want to be, and also to find those jobs and those careers. it is an abomination with what is, you know, with what our public education system's being used for right now. But I'm proud. We stood up, we stood firm, and we'll stay tuned to see what that bill does in the House.
Representatives Engel and Abell, that bill's now headed to the House. Are you preparing for a fight now?
We are, absolutely. I know this is something that our caucus leadership has been vocal on, and we've been vocal on as well as we have seen the fight unfold over in the Senate. It was really shocking to me to see the debate regarding the timeline about when parents should receive notification if their child has been either questioned by law enforcement or been the victim of a crime. The Parents' Bill of Rights, as enacted, said that parents need to be notified immediately.
Yeah.
And the Democrats revised that in their so-called cleanup language to say at no less than 48 hours. Well, 2 days is lifetimes of time in a situation like this. And this is something where parents absolutely need to know right away. And so I think this debate will continue in the House, and we're going to be fighting it every step of the way.
I would agree and believe that we need to preserve this parental rights as it was the initiative that people signed. I know we didn't get a chance to vote on it because the legislature adopted it, which was the right thing to do, but we should also let it alone and be careful and make sure that anything we're doing with it should be bipartisan.
Wood stoves is an issue that is coming up in both the Senate and House, and it's, you know, it's kind of a complicated bill, in Senator Short, so I'm going to have you explain exactly. You know, I think some people hear us talk about it and say, oh, somebody's looking to ban wood stoves. Well, that's not exactly what's happening, so we should be clear on what the wood stove situation is.
Well, yes, except I've been following this issue for a very long time since I was first elected to the House. The bill itself doesn't ban wood stoves, to be clear, but the bill would allow Ecology to have open-ended rulemaking to determine what stoves can be sold in the state of Washington. Now, in order to do that, they would absolutely put their own certification program into place. And while they might not ban things today, I absolutely believe without a doubt, again, throughout my time in the legislature, there has been an interest in really doing, you know, allowing less wood stoves and pellet stoves, you know, for folks to use for their heat. And I know that sounds, I know that that might be presumptuous on my part, but the problem is I've seen so many things over the years, and it's why I am fighting against this. Incredibly, the bill hasn't come up yet. It's still on a list, to be exact. And my amendment...
Exact for people...
voted out of committee. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. We get into our own word zone over here.
I'm legislative speak police over here.
Yeah, so. No, and I appreciate that. So my amendment would essentially say, look, the state could adopt federal standards. Actually, those federal standards are more stringent. The stoves everybody has today, or the newer ones especially, meet that standard. Really, what this is about is castigating EPA. There's probably some reason for that in how they certified stoves. But to turn around and be supportive of a block of eastern states in the United States, northeastern states, and Fairbanks, Alaska, doesn't really hold water. If I were to get into the minutia of it, I would say that those states really want to enact their own standard, and that's what Ecology is pushing for. And by the way, folks, that standard has not been put into place, has not been tested. So I just don't want Ecology playing around with something as significant as a very, you know, a very reasonable, you know, cost product to heat your home and to stay comfortable. I just don't like, the more I read on it, the more I just think that this is fundamentally setting you kind of a base, if you will, for things they can do in the future.
It's like opening the door.
Absolutely. Camel's nose under the tent is right. What I would call it.
And so in a sense, we've talked about this before, if Ecology makes its own rules that are different than the federal EPA rules, the wood stove manufacturers may say, well, we can't, I mean, we kind of need one set of regulations, and they may just stop selling. wood stoves in Washington. That would be the fear, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the less opportunity there for different choices, of course, those prices are going to go through the roof as well and make it less affordable.
That's Senator Shelley Short. Also with us, Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Live from Olympia on Okanagan Country Radio. If you have a question, you can email me directly, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov, or call the station. That's 509-826-0100. 509-826-0100. Something that we were talking about before the show went on the air today was Group B water systems. My initial reaction was like, maybe we shouldn't talk about Group B water systems because I don't know what a Group B water system is. But Representative Engel does, thankfully, and he's here to educate us on why it's important.
Well, thank you. It is important. And I guess the best way to start is to explain what basics of water systems. So you have your public water systems, municipal, run by a city, which are Group A. So Group A water systems are water systems that are more than 14 homes sharing a water source. Group B is less than 14. And I think it was about 10 years ago, we transferred management of Group B's over to local health departments. I believe Senator Short was involved with that. Mm-hmm. And so what they did, though, when they did that, they kept in place this requirement for a satellite management agency to own or operate the water system, which this organization is really to be the liaison between the Department of Health and the owner of the water system or the people who use it. The problem is we don't really need that. Because on these low-complexity systems, you're talking about a well and a pressure tank and a handful of homes. If there's no treatment required, there's no air reaching this water or opportunities for contamination to happen easily, there's no reporting requirements to the Department of Health, but we're still required to pay this agent to be the intermediary. And it just is an additional cost that's unnecessary. So this idea for this bill that I'm going to be dropping hopefully today came from Tri-County Health District, and the State Association of Local Public Health Officers supports it. And so it would just remove that requirement for low-complexity Group B water systems. So that's a sharing a well, 3 to 9 houses, is as the bill's currently written, would not be required to pay an operator to do this. And it's just going to be a streamlining, cutting your regulation, making it a little more affordable. And these systems are often used when you're going to build a house. Maybe you've got a few friends with houses in an area and you're going to add another house and you just share that well. It drops the cost significantly. And it's just a great bill. And I'm hoping I can get some good support for it.
Excellent. Representative Abel, you've been kind of quiet over there. I feel like we've been ignoring you. And I don't want to. Do you have any bills that are coming up that you want to touch on?
Yeah, a couple of bills. So, first of all, kind of an update for our listeners from the last couple of weeks. So, we had talked before about my House companion bills to Senator Holley's longstanding efforts to hire a lot more law enforcement officers here in this state. So, as a reminder, these bills provide $100 million for the hiring of law enforcement officers here in Washington. It also creates a sales tax incentive for local jurisdictions. It's actually a credit, so the taxpayers don't pay anymore. It's just that the local jurisdictions receive more of those tax dollars to hire law enforcement officers. So one of those bills, the $100 million for law enforcement, received a hearing in House Appropriations this week. We're waiting to see if it will be voted out of committee and onto the floor. So I'm feeling good about that. That was the next most important step there. Also, I've introduced a package of bills designed to promote judicial reform here in the state of Washington. So by way of background, when we have a vacancy in any of our judicial positions here in the state, so state Supreme Court, Court of Appeals, or our state superior courts, the governor appoints somebody to serve in that position, and that person then runs at the next election. And the statistics show that there's a lot of lack of information about judicial candidates out there. Washington is a little bit unique. Unlike a lot of states, we elect our judges. The elections for judges are often low turnout. People don't really know a lot about their judges. They're nonpartisan, so there's not a Republican or a Democrat party affiliation, which can have pros and cons, but it means that people have less information right. about the judicial candidate.
Those are hard ones, even for me, who's, you know, who obviously follows this stuff pretty closely. It's always, I have to do a lot of research before I vote on those.
It's very tough. And it's something actually I am passionate about because our judges are so important. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody gets in a situation with a family parenting plan, or they get sideways with a legal issue of some sort, you know, the character, the judgment, the intelligence, and the integrity of the judge is going to be really, really important. So I've introduced a bill that would require Senate confirmation by a two-thirds majority vote for any of the governor's appointments to a vacant position on the state Supreme Court or the Court of Appeals. So these are the two most important courts in the state, and my belief is that we need to have broad bipartisan buy-in on the appointments to these courts, and again, acknowledging these courts are uniquely important and explicitly nonpartisan. I think it's really important that we have our other branch of government, the legislative branch of government, have a say in this.
So following the federal kind of standard, basically. I mean, it's different because these judges will eventually have to be elected, but like you said, once you're in, your chances of being elected are pretty good. So it's kind of like what the federal government
does. Well, here's some statistics. So over half of our current state Supreme Court was initially appointed and then, of course, you know, ran as incumbents and secured re-election. And almost 80% of our Court of Appeals came in through an appointment process. And here's kind of the backstory is what happens, unfortunately, is judges choose to retire midterm, and that allows some politics to happen. I know you'd be shocked to find out the politics takes place in right. Olympia, you know, where kind of preferred candidates are able to be identified and then appointed. And then the election becomes almost kind of a formality, almost an afterthought.
A coronation. Right?
Really, kind of a coronation. Right. And I want to stop that. I would like to have good, open, free, fiercely contested elections for our Court of Appeals and our state Supreme Court.
And with the two-thirds threshold, it would have to be bipartisan, too. I mean, you wouldn't get somebody who's, and you know, again, this is just for the period of time that they're serving before the election. Mm-hmm. There's still going to be an election for this judge.
That is correct. So you're exactly right. Yeah, it's a bit of a combination of our federal approach and our state approach, where they still have to serve for election. But if they're going to run as essentially an incumbent, they need to have bipartisan buy-in for that service.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
Very excited
bill.
About yeah. that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's something we don't talk about a lot. We do when a judge gets appointed, or when Republicans will talk about when they're unhappy with a Supreme Court decision. It's like, oh, these were all appointed. But, you know, how did we get here? Very interesting. Has the bill had a hearing yet? Do you think it'll get a hearing?
Well, the bill was just dropped on Friday.
Oh, okay.
So call your representative. Yeah, I'm hopeful it will get some traction. One interesting wrinkle is that for to require Senate confirmation of appointees to the state Supreme Court requires a constitutional amendment, and my bills provide for that. But the Court of Appeals is created by statute, so that does not require a constitutional amendment. That can be done with a simple bill. So I'm talking to Democrats, I'm talking to Republicans, I've been talking with the governor's office about this as well, and trying to make sure this is not a poke at this particular governor.
Right,
it's not a poke at any particular, you know, past governors either, but it is saying we need to have bipartisan buy-in on these really important positions.
Senator Short, I wanted to get a update real quick here before we take a break on the fish and wildlife situation. This is very interesting for people who don't know. Just before Governor Inslee left office, he appointed a couple of fish and wildlife commissioners to a commission that has had all sorts of issues and was the subject of a recent study, basically on its inefficiency. What's happened lately with this fish and wildlife issue?
Sure. When we were on the floor, Wednesday was our first full floor day. We had a letter from the governor, a formal request to give him those appointments back. And we took a vote on the Senate floor on Wednesday. It was unanimous to give him those appointments back. I do know that he's been interviewing individuals for those positions. And look, this is about the process. These individuals, when they're chosen, serve for a term of 6 years. And so, you know, in the waning hours of the Inslee administration, he appoints people who could potentially serve for 6 years and really and yet land the whole situation in the new governor's lap. And so I was very supportive of making sure that this governor had the ability to choose, you know, to choose his appointments that would go through the confirmation process. Look, the review that was done by the Ruckelshaus Center, not just about inefficiencies, but blatant attempts to skirt, you know, public process and just really kind of make it their own. And that's not what the commission was set up to do. It's been more than frustrating. And I think it's really important to give the governor that ability to hopefully, you know, get people that are going to be, frankly, more thoughtful in how they approach that position. So I'm super, you know, happy that he will now have the opportunity, as he should have really, frankly, from the start.
Yeah, and all the current members of the commission are Inslee appointees, I would assume. I
mean, yes, they are.
He was there for 12 years. So
yes, they are.
Of course, now I'm sure you hope that Governor Ferguson appoints the right people, right? That's the next step.
I mean, it is. And look, you know, in talking, I serve as ranking Republican on the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee, and that is the committee who will hear the confirmation hearings of the individuals he selects. And we will have those hearings. And sure, with anybody, you hope the right choices are made. That's not a guarantee. But I think to just do what Inslee did in the waning days was really inappropriate and a miscarriage of justice. So it's, you know, it's up to the new governor. And I know there are a lot of groups that are weighing in, as you might expect, on individuals that they would like to see on the commission. So we'll stay tuned to see what he brings forward.
This is Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm Tracy Ellis. Again, inviting you to email me with your questions, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov, or call us 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm Tracy Ellis with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. Once again, you can email me with your questions, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov, or give us a call, 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100. Earlier, we were talking about a bill that undid some provisions in the Parents' Rights Initiative. Well, another bill would undo the initiative process itself. Well, I guess I shouldn't say it would undo it, but it would certainly make some changes to it. And Senator Shore, I know that's a bill that you're fighting. And maybe talk a little bit about what the bill does and why you're against it.
Sure. So what the bill would do is require affidavit signature for the signature gatherers to essentially swear that everything they're providing in the form is accurate. Now, they technically have to do not an affidavit, but just, you know, sign the sheets. The problem is how do you know if the person is providing you accurate information? And it would subject the signature gatherer to penalties. And it would also change the signature verification procedure to require a current residence match in order for the signature to be valid. Well, what about for military men and women? Or what about people who, you know, they've moved? Look, folks, this is about undoing a process, a constitutional process, the right of the people to provide redress to their government. To give them the opportunity to change direction. It's something that's very closely held, and this would upend it in a very big way. And I think when you think about the success that folks across the state of Washington had in the initiatives that were brought forward to the legislature and the Natural Gas Initiative, this is something that is very purposeful. Now, we had a win last week. the amount of testimony and the type of testimony on people who were opposed, Chinese Americans coming forward and saying, you know, this really starts to essentially smell like why we left China. You know, not having the individual right. I mean, their testimony was just unbelievable. And the bill was removed from further consideration. Well, now the bill is back on the list. So we had, you know, folks in the state of Washington had like a two-day reprieve. And then that bill showed back up again because, get this, because there's going to be a hearing on a bill to amend the gubernatorial, you know, the executive order, or excuse me, sorry, emergency powers. It's Monday morning. And we're going, really? So you've agreed to have a hearing on an emergency power bills that the governor already talked about in his state of the state, his first state of the state address when he was first sworn in. And now because we have a hearing on an emergency powers reform bill, now you have to add in the initiative bill back in to just, which just obliterates the people's process. Oh, it's so beyond incredibly frustrating. I'm sure the chair was told to put that bill back up for exec. We are not taking this sitting down. Absolutely, we have a bunch of amendments, and we're working to fight this every, you know, fight against this bill every step of the way. Stay tuned.
I've heard some people call this a solution in search of a problem. Is that an accurate description?
100%. 100%. The Secretary of State's office is the one who validates these signatures. And frankly, when you do, you gather signatures, they always tell you, make sure you gather more than you need. Because yes, there will be things that fall off for whatever reason. But to hold the signature gatherer responsible for ensuring that all of that information is accurate and to potentially suffer significant penalties, you know, because you haven't, that just sends a very chilling message that, you know, folks won't step forward, you know, to gather petition signatures.
You mentioned the emergency powers reform bill, and that was something that, as you mentioned, Governor Ferguson mentioned in his inaugural address. He actually reached out to Senate Republican leader John Braun and said, Senator Braun, I'm willing to work with you on emergency power reform. And here's the bill. It's, you know, it's in the Senate and it looks like it's moving.
Well, at this point, it has a hearing on Friday. It's Senator Wagoner's bill. And
I call that moving because these bills have been able to get hearings in the past. So.
Well, that is true. It's quite a big step. Actually, it's a monumental step forward. And it really, I'll be honest, I do not know the intricacies of the bill. You know, that's a Friday hearing. I got stuff I'm worrying about today. So we will stay tuned. What I do know is it's very similar to bills that we've had in the past that would make sure that the legislature is a part of this process, which was the biggest, you know, the biggest difference when we were dealing with the Inslee administration and all of the COVID shutdowns. So I think it's good. It's absolutely beyond time to make sure that we set changes so folks in the state of Washington never suffer like they did in the 2020s.
There's a bill in the House that I know some priests have a hard time with, a real hard time, because it goes to really the core of who they are and what they do. Can you talk a little bit about that, Representative Abel?
Yeah, sure. So glad you brought this up. So this is House Bill 1211, and what it does is it requires members of the clergy, so, you know, priests or others, to report information that they receive indicating that some sort of abuse is taking place. Even if they learn it in the course of the clergy-penitent relationship, like a confession. And this has been debated a couple of times here in the legislature in recent years. And by way of background, the clergy-penitent privilege goes back hundreds, if not maybe, you know, potentially over 1,000 years.
Yes,
it's deeply rooted in common law. And this issue resonates with me because my professional background is I'm an attorney, right? There are some things that, you know, somebody's able to come to me, seek legal advice, and the information I give to that person is pretty much bulletproof as far as the law being able to get to that. And that's a reflection that there are some relationships that are so important that the law doesn't get to intrude into. And, you know, since our country's founding, that's included the clergy penitent privilege. So there's a bill currently advancing. I mentioned House Bill 1211 just advanced out of the House Early Learning and Human Services Committee. And I anticipate it will come to the floor. There was an amendment that was proposed last year that said that a clergy member could be required to report information of suspected abuse if they became aware of it outside of the confessional or outside of the clergy-penitent relationship. That seemed to have, you know, some more potential support for it, but that does not appear to be in the bill this year. And so, you know, for me, it's broadly concerning. Obviously, I think it's important to ensure that allegations of sexual abuse are fully investigated and prosecuted. But given our longstanding protection of the clergy-penitent relationship, I think that's important to continue. And maybe look at the potential of that amendment that says that if they become aware of it outside of the privilege or outside of the confessional, and then in that case, they would be a reporter. So some nuances there. There's a lot of history there, a lot of competing, you know, interests there. But that's a bill that I'm watching as it moves forward.
I heard one person say it puts clergy in a position of violating either state law or violating their, essentially their agreements with God. You know, I mean, I've heard that. I heard people say that.
Well, it does. And I think this is, again, this is one of the reasons why this privilege has been so long recognized in the United States. And it's a recognition that there are some relationships that the law does not get to intrude into. Mm-hmm. Clergy penitent, attorney client, those are some relationships that are so personal, so intimate that the law does not get to intrude into. So a worrisome bill, and I am keeping an eye on it.
Representative Engel, you were just talking, I don't know if you want to do this here on the air, but well, now you're going to have to because I'm going to put you on. So you were just talking about some bills that were coming up that you just like make you shake your head a little bit. It's just I should let people know that Representatives Engel and Abel are freshman representatives, so it's their first time dealing with some of this stuff. But some bills that, you know, Senator Short probably at this point is kind of immune to it. She's just seen it so much. But bills that just like make you say,
Well, these are bills. There are a few bills that really make me scratch my head. And, you know, I'll say I'm not an expert on them yet. These are some bills that I saw that are coming up. I'll be hearings in my committees this week, so I'll certainly be learning a lot more about them. But upon a casual reading of the titles and the bills themselves, it makes me wonder. So we have House Bill 1732, which would prohibit businesses from owning more than 25 homes. And that just makes me scratch my head. The idea of corporate ownership of housing is a concern to me. And these you hear these reports of corporations buying up, you know, large swaths of cities, and that's concerning. I believe that individual home ownership is the American dream, is something we need to encourage, but the idea of putting bans on businesses owning more than 25 homes makes me wonder what the unintended consequences of that could be. So that's concerning. 1768, I'm going to hear that. I think that's today. I'm hearing these bills in committee would ban companies from owning more than 5 mobile home parks or more than 200 mobile home park units. Again, these are housing options that we need more of. And a lot of individuals, like I think I might like to own a mobile home park, but they're not very easy to jump through the hoops to build them. And they're something we could use more of. So if we ban how many or we limit how many someone could own, how's that going to impact our future housing supply? In my ag committee hearing this week, we have a bill that would ban fur farming and as well as manufacture of fur products. And then give grants to anyone who's might lose their business as a result to help them transition into something else. Anytime we're banning industries, it concerns me. There's one that would increase mining fees for surface mines. This is gravel pits. There's gravel pits all over Okanagan County, right? And so it would increase that annual fee from $2,000 to $3,500. It's probably not going to put anybody out of business, but you know, if you own 5 or 6 gravel pits, that's a good chunk of change out of your pocket. A lot of these are just mom and pop businesses.
I remember someone telling me, it wasn't that long ago, that there's a shortage of gravel, too. It's not like we need fewer of these things. I've heard people in the construction industry say we need more of them, actually. And this is, like you said, if it's one or two of them end up going out of business, that's one or two fewer, you know, gravel bits.
Absolutely. And there's a bill that would ban the possession of farmed octopus and have a $1,000 penalty if you're caught with it in your possession or selling it or transporting it. And I guess, you know, I don't eat octopus. It's not going to affect me, but I will say that when you have a $1,000 penalty for possession of octopus, when we're allowing people to possess deadly fentanyl left and right, I just wonder what we're doing here. Mm. And then the last one that really gets my hair standing up is a bill to allow translocation of grizzly bears into Washington state. And this is a bill that Senator Morton, Senator Short's predecessor and a longstanding hero of the 7th District, had got into legislation, a law passed to prohibit translocation of grizzly bears into Washington state. And this bill would just be a clean repeal of that work that our predecessor did. So all these bills are ones that concern me. I'll be hearing more about them this week. And if people want to comment, they're all available to comment on, submit your thoughts on, and so forth.
Well, now I want to follow up on the bill to undo the work that Senator Morton spent years tirelessly fighting for folks in North Central Washington, especially the areas where these grizzly bears would be translocated. And he did it because what he understood at the time is the state of Washington was working behind everybody's back and working with Canada and some of these environmental groups to promote, you know, this reintroduction. And so his bill, which took a lot of time to get through, just said, look, the state of Washington can't spend a dime on this. And that while Fish and Wildlife, you know, would still be dealing with the issue, they couldn't do it in a proactive way. And that law that he got put into effect, you know, has stood the test of time. And, you know, one might say, oh, well, maybe it's not needed now because we're going to have the federal reintroduction. But I don't think it's appropriate to undo that at all. We will be fighting to keep that law into place. I was so offended when I saw that bill. I thought all that work that Senator Morton did. So we're going to work to protect it.
Got a question, I don't know if it's a question or a statement, and I'm not exactly sure where they're going with it, but I'll just ask it as they asked it. Do you consider making money for the state instead of spending money?
Well, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think it goes to the concern that a lot of us have that state government is just spending way beyond its means, you know, every time we put together a budget. And that's certainly an issue that we've got right now. We're facing between a $6 and $10 billion, $11 billion budget deficit. And that's one of the biggest issues that we're facing here in Olympia. As far as ways for the state to make money, it's an interesting question. I haven't really addressed that so far in my 3 weeks here.
Well, the only way I can really think good way for the state to make money is to manage our forests more aggressively. And I know there's this movement to lock up more of our state forests and stop producing. And then they get these ideas that we should use state dollars to buy more land so they can manage that instead, which I think is a move in the wrong direction. The state is typically not as much in the money-making business as in the money-taking business. And so I believe we need to primarily focus on living within our means, taking as little as possible from the taxpayers, and then returning the best product we can with those dollars when we do take them.
Well, I think when you think about the entrepreneurs throughout the state of Washington, our small businesses, our manufacturers, you know, there are so many policies that we've passed here that really make it harder for them to do that. It makes it harder for them to expand their operations and to do business. We are a very trade dependent state, and when you think of the work that's done to really unravel the very thing that Washington State's really good at from an entrepreneurial sense, that would bring just by the manufacturing and the building and the designing and all of the things that go into it would bring additional capacity into the state of Washington. But instead, they continue to pass laws that really harm agriculture. They harm our use of natural resources. They harm our, you know, competitiveness and our manufacturing. And look, we want laws to protect the environment. We know all of those things are very important to Washingtonians. They're important to us too. But the problem is it's gone so far way overboard that in and of itself is preventing, you know, I think, success for the state of Washington and putting it as a, putting us at least partly into the position we are today.
Some closing thoughts, some things that we didn't get to that that you think are important as we move forward through the legislative session. I mean, we're starting to get to getting close to what we call cutoff. And what that means is there's a time where the bills, basically there are no more bills being heard in the chambers of origin. So the House and Senate kind of stop with bills that originate there. That's coming up. And then after that, it's just voting on bills, and then we start the whole process over. The bills from the House come to the Senate, the bills from the Senate come to the House, and the whole thing starts over again. Anyway, that's coming up. Senator, I saw you raise your hand, Senator Abel.
Not Senator. Our Senator's here,
sorry.
Senator Short.
I promoted or demoted Representative Abel.
Sorry. That'd be a significant promotion.
I think they would say he got demoted. So.
Yeah, I've got kind of a fun piece of legislation that I have dropped, and it is somewhat to my surprise, I don't have the number here, but it's designed to promote the identification and the mining of rare earth minerals here in our state. So I serve on the Energy and Environment Committee, and rare earth minerals, for those who don't know, are incredibly rare minerals that exist for a variety of purposes, among other things, batteries, but there's also a significant national security component associated with these. And so I view this through a national security lens, and our supply chains on these issues are very heavily dependent on overseas suppliers. And so it's been fun for me to partner with a couple of other folks attempting to strengthen our domestic capacity for rare earth minerals.
So, this is a big deal. People, yeah. I mean, nationally, internationally, this is a huge deal. So it's interesting that you're working on it. I mean, because we need these minerals more than ever, some would argue.
Well, and there's an alignment here between both our national security interests and the interests by our friends on the other side of the aisle in this transformation to a green economy. All those batteries, you know, need a lot of rare earth minerals associated with them. So at least so far, this idea has received somewhat of a friendly reception.
Representative Engel, anything you got cooking over there?
Well, I think the I'm just about tapped out on bills. Like, you know, I've got the Wolf bill. I got the two housing bills that are coming up for committee hearings this week. I think I talked about those last week. Got the Group B water system bill that hopefully is going to drop today. So then trying to do the best I can in committee hearing things. But I'm just really excited to be here working on behalf of the people. I'm excited that there's been people from the district making it over. There was a handful of people from Okanagan County last week, and I think I got some more coming in this week. And so it's really an honor to serve the people here.
That's a haul, too, all the way from over there. And, you know, we should let people know that you're invited. This is, you know, your buildings that we're sitting here. I mean, they belong to you. The legislative bill, if you've never seen it, and there are a lot of people, I'm sure, in the district that we're talking to right now who've never seen the legislative building. It's pretty spectacular. The first time you see it, you walk through it, and we definitely invite you to come over, and you're more than welcome, and your legislators will make time for you. Trust me, they will. They want to talk to you if they can. Sometimes you have to be pretty flexible because they are pretty busy. I know Senator Short, we've mentioned this before, is the floor, so the minority floor leader, a Senate Republican floor leader, which means that she's always coordinating what's happening on the floor of the Senate, which is a complex process, really, isn't it?
It is. It is. I call it three-dimensional chess. You know, it's an honor to serve and utilize that position to make a difference for folks in the 7th District and for the values that Washingtonians throughout the state hold. It's quite the position. It makes me really busy. But when folks come over, I know that sometimes you don't have a large window of time. Shannon will come find me. If we're not super busy on the floor, I can be pulled off the floor for a few moments, or walk to and from committee. I've also done those kind of walking appointments. It's really important that we're connected. I know in those off chances that I'm not able to meet, I know Shannon has graciously will meet with people and make sure that I know, you know, what their concerns are. But just give it a try and come over. It's really an incredible system here. And you think about the absolute years and years and years of folks who have gone before us, who have traveled the same distance, who have walked our footsteps. And it is absent the frustrations that we all feel when we're over here as conservatives, I think just being here in those footsteps is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about this before. And again, it's probably good to just remind people every once in a while that, you know, Republicans are in the minority in Washington State. That means Democrats have 60% majorities in both the House and Senate. So they could pretty much pass any, if they're united, they could kind of pass anything they want. Of course, the governor is a Democrat too, although he has indicated that he's maybe not going to be quite as, I don't know what's the right word I'm looking for? Quite as...
He's going to think about things carefully,
okay, Larry, thank you.
I think. you know, it. The thing is not everybody is united, even the caucuses. And I think, you know, our job is to look for individuals within their caucus that might share our points of view or maybe have concerns about what they're seeing come across either committee, but especially on the floor. So we take that job very seriously, regardless of being in the minority or not. And, you know, there are times where you can come together and say, you know what, this bill isn't good. It's not going in a good direction. Maybe it would be better in a different direction.
Yeah. And not, you know, here's the deal. Not all Republicans agree with each other. Not all Democrats agree with each other.
Nope.
I mean, you know, that's the way it works. And that's democracy. It's a little bit, sometimes it's a little bit messy, but it's supposed to be that way. And we want to thank you for being with us on Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell.